Chad Smith. Welcome back to episode 201.
Episode 201. Man, I wish I had another champagne from Champagne right with me.
So do I. It was a comfortable show, lubricated by champagne.
Should do it more often, like the good old days.
I'm for it.
Yeah, me too.
Hold on one second. Guess who I'm messaging with right now?
Luke Shepherdson.
That's right.
Boom. Man. That's the icon that surfing does not deserve, but surfing so needs.
Desperately needs, right? In the era of just like millionaire pro surfers, it is the best story.
I mean, him up there in his Honolulu County lifeguard uniform was brilliant.
It was all time. Which is, of course, the big story of the week, which there's no need to kind of pad it with anything else. It is the only thing worth discussing this week, practically. It's arguably the greatest story that I can remember in surfing's history.
I mean, I think certainly, and I think better yet, it will age wonderfully. I think in the moment, it's one of those things that, wow, like you've experienced, what a contest, right? And I think any surf aficionado worth his or her salt, of course, tuned in for at least part of the Eddie that day. And just the whole day from the swell that kept on building seemed like it got even more and more consistent. I mean, there was just wave after wave after wave, typical big surf events. There's the Jaws one I remember. You're just sitting there for like 20 or 30 minutes sometimes, or at least it feels in a lull. It didn't seem like there was one lull that whole day of the Eddie.
No, there really wasn't. I did not watch straight through from the beginning to the end, but every time that I pulled it up, there was action happening, you know? Yep. Let me message him back real quick. So Luke and I were trying to record an episode of Surf Splendor, like a straightforward interview to get his whole backstory and his experience of that day. So we're just messaging to get our time sorted out. But this is any podcaster will tell you, scheduling is the biggest headache of podcasting. Like nobody takes it super seriously. Traditionally guests, you know, maybe it's because podcasting is only becoming established now, but for the last 10 years, nobody really took it too seriously. So scheduling guests was always a nightmare. But apparently it's going to happen today, this afternoon. So
I mean, I think the problem with the podcast versus a paper interview or like a typed up interview is podcast actually takes the hour and a half or whatever for the interviewer or interviewee's time, whereas I can get enough for like a, you know, however many word article after a 15 minute chat.
Exactly. And that's the thing, Luke. First of all, the world wants his attention right now, so he's spread super thin, and he's still working. There's been tons of swell, and he's a lifeguard, so he's actually working. Then he has a little bit of time off. He's got kids, he's got a wife, so those are the priorities. Then afterwards, it's stacking interviews, and he doesn't, I don't think, listen to podcasts. So he's like, how long do we need? And I'm like, 90 minutes. He's like, what? Yeah. Why would you possibly need 90 minutes? You know, are you sending a film crew? I'm like, no, it's on Zoom. It'll be fine. Trust me.
Epic though. This is going to be the show that I want to know Luke Shepherdson's backstory. I want to know what he's doing. I want to know what turns him on. I want to know everything about Luke Shepherdson.
I'll add that turn on question to my list.
You should just say, what turns you on? Like, what turns you on got turned so needlessly sexual. Doesn't mean sexual. Just what lights your fire, Luke Shepherdson? What gets your motor running?
It's a great question. It's a great question, though, because it might stimulate, no pun intended, a sexual answer.
Sure. I could.
And so you want a question like that that is kind of open-ended because it's revealing about them in multiple ways as to how they answer it.
What turns you on is the Rorschach test question of podcasting.
Exactly.
Do you see the first things in here?
I'm adding it to the list.
Perfect.
So to do justice to everything that we just alluded to, on Sunday, the Eddie went. So this is the Eddie Aikau Big Wave Invitational. It is, I am calling it, the most prestigious surf event on the planet. I think it's absolutely the most prestigious big wave event on the planet, but I think we could say it's probably the most prestigious in all of surfing, right?
I mean, I think it goes even without saying. I just think it is.
Okay.
I think that Pipeline and everything is phenomenal and great, but all of those run every year, right? Eddie, the Eddie from both the history, its namesake, the iCal family, all of it, right? And the fact that it only runs when it's big enough.
And the Eddie is so such named because Eddie Lifeguard was a, I'm sorry, Eddie iCal was a lifeguard at Waimea Bay. And there's stories of heroic rescues that he has made, but he ultimately was lost at sea. So this event is held in his honor. And he's a phenomenal surfer as well. And this was at a time before professional surfing, really. So it was just men and women riding mountains, you know, in Hawaii, kind of braving the surf. And so he was among the most equipped to brave any ocean condition. And he was lost at sea. In a really interesting story, there's a great 30 for 30 about it. It's probably the best version of that story that I've ever seen. But this event is named after him. And so it's only held when the waves are big enough. So it often doesn't run for 8 years at a time. And I think in the 30 or 40 years since the first event, it's only been held 10 times now. So it's extra prestigious for those things. The waves are the stars, you know, like we only run it when it's pumping surf, and it's an invitational. So it's not just the same regurgitated top five or top 10 pro surfers. And because the span of time is so long, there's new big wave surfers or new local chargers or whatever that get invited to it. Also, this year was the first time that the men and women competed side by side in the same event. So all of this was to set up. It's also the first time, by the way, that there hasn't been a major sponsor in a very long time. Quicksilver was involved with this event for as long as I remember.
Yeah.
And so this is the family, the iCal family, are now in control, running the event. And everything was leading up to being like a memorable event. Well, the swell showed up in force. It was arguably the best eddy swell that the Eddie has ever run in. And wouldn't you know it, a lifeguard, a North Shore County lifeguard, who woke up to work that day. He was planning to lifeguard that day because he was on the alternate list. He wasn't even on the initial invite list. He was an alternate, but a couple of people withdrew from the event. So Luke got the call up, and a local lifeguard won the most prestigious surf event on the planet, which is named after a lifeguard who was lost at sea.
I mean, my goodness gracious, what a wrap, David Lee Scales. Well done.
Thank you.
Real quick about that. I mean, there's so many different ways in to talk about the day. And as you said, like the invitee list is epic, but this is, I'm not even going to go negative on the WSL. Look at me, David Lee, pivoting off right here. What I liked about it, not compared to anything else or any other professional surfing events or tours, is the broad list of people you get to an invitational, right? So you have Ross Clark Jones, Michael Ho, these like elder legends mixing in with a Luke Shepherdson, who before, you know, that day before the Eddie ran was a full no name. So you have like, that's the beautiful part about an invitational. It's not like, oh, who came up through the qualifying series in order to surf this event? Nope. It is who do the people want to see, right? Or who do we as the organizers feel this honor should go to, right? Because getting nominated for the Eddie is a huge honor. Surfing in the Eddie, an even bigger honor.
I think it's the ultimate meritocracy, because you could argue that the QS is also a meritocracy, and you can't make it to the CT unless you earn your way through the QS. But there's so many stipulations with the QS, you know, and there's the venues themselves kind of dictate who's going to win. You know, you could be a really great big wave reef surfer, but if the events are at small beach breaks, then you don't make it onto the CT or whatever. Well,
and truly in money, like if you have rich parents who can send you around the world, you know, and feed you well and put you up in fine hotels where you get a good night's sleep, right? Like a Luke Shepherdson could never qualify for the CT via the QS.
Correct. And so, well, without sponsors or something like that. But yeah, so this is the ultimate meritocracy in that there these are just, I don't know who's even dictating or who's creating the invite list, but whoever they are just surveying big wave surfing as a whole. They're like, who are the people who are riding big waves around the planet, you know, and doing it the best. And that's who should be invited.
You don't and, hear, I wonder if it's, I'm sorry to pitch up, but I wonder if it's from the, if it's because the Aikawa family picks, because you don't hear grumbling, not to throw old Albie Layer under the bus here, but you like the people who get invited, I don't recall seeing somebody take to Instagram and say and grumble about not getting invited to the end.
Never once. I've never seen that. It's hard to argue with the list of the invites. You know what I mean? Whereas it's easy for Albie to argue against the list of the invites for the Pipe Masters this year, because why would Rasta Rob or Craig Anderson be competing in that event? You know what I mean? Albie can easily raise his hand and say, I deserve over that guy. But Albie can't necessarily raise his hand and say, I deserve a spot over Ben Wilkinson.
Yeah.
You know,
or something. Pete like Mel that. Or, yeah. Even, yeah. The, even the olders.
Well, that's so
fun. Watching Shane and Pete and all these guys mix it up with everyone else. I mean, it is every heat is so fun to watch.
I agree. And Shane Dorian is having a moment. Like, I thought seeing Shane out there was incredible, because he's still at the top of his game. He's still super duper fit. He's still at the top of his game. And then he caught a wave at Backdoor that he posted on Instagram yesterday. I swear I watched that thing 8 times because it was, I think a part of it was nostalgia. I was trying to tease apart, am I just into this because I grew up watching Shane and so I'm nostalgic about it? And then I'm like, no, I think it's just, he is that stylish. He's that good. He's that kind of in tune with the wave. His board's a little bit longer than the other kids are riding. Like, there's something that looks great about that. It was just, it could only be Shane that made it look that way, you know?
Shane Dorian, I feel, is who we want Kelly Slater to be. The guy who's under the radar enough, shows up enough, and doesn't make a spectacle about himself ever.
And not beating the drum of any ideology ever.
No. Yeah.
He's clearly sponsored to the hilt, and we're all aware of who those sponsors are, but he's never rubbing them in our face, I guess, or like promoting them overtly.
You get exactly as much Shane Dorian as you want every year, no more, no less.
It's so true. And it's like, we know that he's into hunting. But he's not like
Instagram is hunting stuff or putting it out nonstop.
Or trying to convince us about the virtues of hunting, or trying to convince people who are anti-hunting why they should be pro-hunting, you know, whereas Kelly's doing the flat earth thing or whatever else he's involved in. So yeah, Shane is the man for sure.
Very true.
And great to see him in that event. And yeah, seeing him in, there's so many storylines in this event. We can't even discuss all of them, because the Luke story surpasses all of them, you know?
Of course. Like, the funny thing real quick too about the Eddie is, you think about this contest, and when it doesn't run for years, you think that, oh, Nazare and Jaws and these ones beat it, right? Because on sheer force, like, Jaws is bigger, Nazare is bigger, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, watching in your mind, you can trick yourself, I think, if you haven't seen it in a while. You know, as much as I get the history and the prestige and all this kind of stuff, watching guys go straight on big, huge boards isn't that fun. But my goodness, when you see it again, the nuance of how deep they were taking off compared to each other, like, all this, it's not a go straight on a big board contest.
Well, it's because of the bay. I think the amphitheater of the bay allows you to see how chaotic everything is. Like, at Jaws, it's so it's so perfect. It's just a perfect reeling wave with a channel. And so the boats that are sitting in the channel create a false sense of security, because you could be close to the action. Whereas at the bay, the boats aren't safe. There's no boats, but it's the jet skis aren't safe. Like, the jet skis can still get cleaned up by a closeout set, because it closes out the entire bay.
Watching the jet skis scrape for the horizon, some, like, we're all like full throttle out to sea, is awesome to see.
Yeah. And when you see the guys paddling out through the shore break, you know, or like trying to time it, and you see how big and treacherous the shore break is, all of that creates a real drama that is relatable for you and I. I mean, even if you're not a surfer, you see that and it's pure drama in the way that I think Nazare has a lot of that same dramatics. But the going straight thing, there's so much warble and bump and all these other things on the wave that even if they ultimately end up going in a line from A to B, there's a lot that happens in that straight line, you know?
Well, in one of Luke's best waves, I mean, I watched that thing in real time and it was substantially different from other waves ridden during that heat, right? Like he was so deep and his drop was so critical. Like, I mean, it was a real thing of beauty, that one ride.
I think he's knows the bay. He is so in tune with the bay. And I don't know if he's a lifeguard at that spot specifically, but it almost seems like he is because he's more attuned to that wave than anybody else. And not just with this event. I don't know if you remember back in 2016, there was a story. And I don't even remember how or why this was publicized. It might have been when Peter King was doing tour notes or something. And so he was filming all the behind the scenes stuff. But it was Kelly Slater, Ross Williams, John Florence, and a young no-name Luke Shepherdson on a giant day in 2016 at the Bay. They all tried to paddle out. Only one of those four guys made it out, and it was Luke Shepherdson. Kelly got washed in, Ross got washed in, John got washed in, and they were on the beach talking to, again, I think it was Peter King maybe, and they're just like, dude, it's gnarly out there. It's hard to make it out. Like Luke was the only one who made it out. And I remember at that time just thinking, wow, how cool for that no name. I don't think he was a lifeguard at that time either. Just like, I'm going to remember that name, you know?
Well, that's some surf journalism right there, David Lee Scales.
Yeah. And right before that, in 2015, he was in the pipe trials and he got a 10. It was the opening round, like heat one of the pipe trials, and he got a 10 out there.
What happens to Luke Shepherdson from here? Does he like, does a sponsor go out and say, ooh, this is a good look? Or do they think, man, too bad we weren't sponsoring him already, but ship has sailed for that?
Like, so this is a great question, and I will ask him, but what should, for you and I to discuss, what should happen? What is the right move here? Where do you think there is the opportunity? If you were running a brand or if you were involved in some way that could make something happen for him, what do you think is the, or maybe your manager, let's say your wife, put your wife's hat on and think in those terms, like how do you help Luke leverage what just happened to achieve wealth and fame?
I mean, the thing is, maybe wealth and fame aren't the best. He's already a working lifeguard. Maybe he's living the dream, right, already, in terms of, sure, he's got to wake up and he's got to do this job. But my goodness, talk about being in a band of brothers and a wonderful, like, fascinating job. So if I was a brand, I mean, I would figure out if he hates his job, then I'd maybe try to figure something out. But I would try to supplement his income so he can be on, you know, and figure it out with the, like, I don't know. I mean, Eddie was an ambassador for not only Hawaii, but for the lifeguard profession, right? It would be cool if that lifeguard, the Honolulu lifeguards, could figure out, okay, let's use Luke, you know, he'll work, but let's also use him as an ambassador. Let's send him around and have him surf and talk about ocean safety or whatever, right? Like, that's what I would think. And then some brand should just sponsor him just to have him.
I was going to say that ambassador thing is smart for them and their business, but that's not necessarily lucrative, pun intended.
But if they could do that and then open up the time by being an ambassador, then you have time to do what he wants to do. And then if you have a brand supplementing that, right, and saying, hey, you send Luke around to be an ambassador of Aloha, and we will supplement that for you.
I would be surprised if Luke... Like if Luke got an opportunity with a, let's say, surf brand sponsorship, they would have expectation for him to be a pro surfer, of course. So I would be surprised if Luke would abandon his current lifeguard career to pursue a career in pro surfing, because it's not guaranteed to last very long. You know, it could only last a year or two, and he's got to be away from the family and all that sort of stuff. So I think
you got to surf a bunch of crap waves. Like maybe he doesn't want, you know, like he's got to go and surf stinking, I don't know, like he couldn't just be on the CT all of a sudden.
No. So I think the ideal move for Luke would be partner with some like fitness brand. Like his, I think he, I don't know what his fitness regime is, but the kid is fit. You know, he's a lifeguard and he's charges Waimea and makes the paddle out when those other guys can't. So whatever Athletic Greens, whatever the brand is, partner with them, make a couple $100,000 for the next couple of years and continue lifeguarding along the way. It actually ties in with your day job as well. So you can kind of leverage those, let them use your likeness. Don't chase the whole vlog thing or social media thing. He doesn't even have an Instagram account. So that's clearly not him, but let them use your likeness and pay you for it. And I think that would be good enough, you know?
I mean, again, the not the surfer we deserve, but such the surfer we need. Having the guy that doesn't have an Instagram, doesn't have a vlog, who's out there just doing it. And as a lifeguard, again, I mean, just that he's perfect.
He is. Well, okay. Career opportunity here. We were talking yesterday about his, he's the doppelganger for Pedro Pascal, right?
Sure is. He so is.
Spot on, right? And so there's a entire career path that exists just behind the veil of anything that we ever discuss, which is stunt work. There's all these North Shore, like Eli Olson does stunt work in Hollywood and gets paid bank for doing this very specialized thing that only few people on the planet can do. Luke Shepherdson is one of those guys who could do that work.
I mean, a enterprising director and or writer should make a action adventure. They should just make a surf movie. I mean, they should just do the Luke Shepherdson story starring Pedro with Luke doing all the surfing.
Absolutely. Just for, it's just a movie about Pedro, but Luke's playing Pedro. The pro actor is actually not even in the film. Yeah. Luke's doing it.
Yeah. Luke's doing the whole thing. Luke is doing it all. I mean, Pedro is a really great actor. That's the thing. So you'd want him. I mean, the Luke Shepherdson story starring Pedro, that's what I want to see. I want to see Pedro on land and Luke in the water.
You want to know. So we're trying to figure out, like, I think you said, like, what is Pedro Pascal? What is he from again or something? And I was like, I've seen his face a few times, but I can't exactly pin down. So Narcos was, I think, his big breakout.
Narcos, he's got a show. Epic game. Game of Thrones, he was in.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay.
Yeah. He died in Game of Thrones, but he was a great character in Game of Thrones too.
Okay. He's in a show. The reason why he's in my awareness now is he's in some big show on HBO that's getting all these raves that I have not watched, but it gets advertised to me. So his name or his face was on my front of mind, but there was a phenomenal film last year that I don't think we discussed, but you would love that he was in. It's called The Unbearable Weight of Being Nicolas, The Unbearable Weight and Genius of Being Nicolas Cage or something like that.
I've read all about it and I don't know. I'm going to watch it tonight, David Lee Scales. I'm not even kidding.
When, with what you read, were they positive reviews?
Yeah. Rave reviews. Okay. What I read.
Okay, let me look up the actual name because it's the name is hilarious in and of itself. The Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent.
Yeah.
And it's, so I guess Nicolas Cage, his name isn't in the title. I thought maybe they changed the title because I think it used to be in the title, but The Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent. And it's about Nicolas Cage being Nicolas Cage.
Yeah. I'm excited to see it. I've been excited to see it. It fell off the radar, but back on thanks to Luke Shepherdson.
Yeah. And look, by the way, Nicolas Cage famously has had like massive tax avoidance issues. Like he owes tons of money. So that's why he's done so many terrible films over the years, is he's trying to recoup that and pay him back. So the film is about that. He is Nicolas Cage, but he needs money. And there's some drug kingpin in South America who is going to pay him some exorbitant fee just to come to one of his parties. And that's Pedro's character. So the story is about Nicolas Cage going down to this party to collect on that money. But it's incredible. And Pedro's amazing in it too.
Love it.
Yeah, really good. Okay. So let's talk another storyline. We were saying Shane Dorian, that wave, Shane Dorian and Pete Mel on the peak together on an insane wave, riding it off to the shoulder and then high-fiving. if Luke's story didn't exist, that would have been as great as Kelly and Rob's high five.
I mean, so true. And maybe it still is. Maybe even under the banner of Luke Shepherdson, it still is.
It very well could be. Speaking of Kelly Slater, world's most benevolent surfer Kelly Slater graciously gifts his Eddie invitation to North Shore legend Chris Owens in act of blazing love, exclamation point.
It was a moment. Did you see the interview with Kelly Slater talking about his act of blazing love?
I did.
It was such a, I mean, Kelly as a psychological study is fascinating. Like watching Kelly wrestle with what he did in real time, watching his eyes twitch and watching him self-loathe for giving up the day, but then also, no, I had to go on my instinct. So for those who haven't watched it, it's worth a while. Watch Kelly, which is, man, I mean, all the storylines came full circle at this Eddie. You listener may or may not remember, what's his name again? Owen?
Luke. Luke. Oh, Chris Owens.
Chris Owens. Chris Owens' name from, he was the one that got run over by the Val going straight at Waimea. Had to go to the hospital, I think. Thought his whole Eddie chance was over. I think he was alternate, of course. Thought he, you know, it was over. So apparently he got fixed up good enough. And Kelly gives him his invite or his slot in it, because Kelly just wasn't feeling it that day, which was amazing to me. The fact that, I mean, Luke said in his interview afterwards, after winning, it was big and scary out there, right? You think these guys don't feel fear. Like, I'm sure they're all scared. Kelly is no Philippe Toledo. Kelly has proven himself in waves of consequence time and time again. He's a past Eddie winner. He takes off on huge waves all the time, right? Kelly is no scaredy cat. But Kelly woke up and there was an ill wind blowing. He thought something bad was going to happen. So he pulled out, gave his spot to Chris Owens. But watching him second guess his own decision there on interview, like knowing, and again, of course, Kelly's narcissistic. I don't think it's like, I think anybody is, not even saying that as a slam. I think anybody at that level of greatness, from Tom Brady to any athlete who has, you know, done remarkable things, I think you're so, part of how you do that is by being obsessed with self, right? Yeah. Kelly is obsessed with self. So watching Kelly know that he wasn't out on the greatest Eddie ever in ostensibly the greatest surf the Eddie has gotten, because he had a bad feeling, is just like, you could just see him getting torn apart inside.
It validates that surfing is dangerous, you know? Like you said, you think these guys aren't scared, and you think Kelly would just... He's beat the ocean, you know, like Kelly is master of that domain. That's a reminder that he's still not. Even the best in the world, 11-time world champ, wasn't feeling it that day. But, I mean, that was his quote, by the way. Yeah. That was his quote, was just, I'm not feeling it today. And it's so smart. It's like, yes, that is so smart to listen to that feeling. And it doesn't mean that he had a premonition that he was going to die, but it does mean that he very well could get injured. Like, injury is a very real threat out there, and Pipe's coming up next week. The entire season is ahead. He's 51 years old. You know, like, you don't need to get injured at this point for one day of glory. You've had many days of glory.
I guarantee you, though, I'm going to argue, I guarantee you that's not why he did it. I'm going to say he had a premonition of death, because I've seen Kelly is, again, no Philippe Toledo, right? Philippe Toledo, I think everyone would argue, I mean, is A, chicken, but also B, didn't want to risk his spot at the lower trestles finals day by hucking over the ledge at Chopu, right?
And getting injured.
I don't think I think good waves are all that matters to him. So I don't think he was thinking, Pipe's coming up, I'm going to sit this one out. I think that was epic Waimea. I think he would have surfed it had he not thought he was going to die, or had a real nagging feeling that something bad is going to happen. Not I'm going to blow a pipeline, but something bad is going to happen out there to me that's not going to be cool.
Well, I like the idea of making a bold claim that Kelly had a premonition he was going to die, because that makes podcasting more fun. I think it's somewhere in the middle. I think there's no version of Pipe that he would have backed out of, because he loves Pipe. There's no version, well, I was going to say no version of, let's say, Cloudbreak that he would back out of, because he loves that wave and that's his style. That's his bread and butter. But he's not really a, you know, rhino gun big wave guy. He's a get barreled big version of that wave guy, but he's not a real, even though he's won the Eddie, he's not really, like, his heart isn't dedicated to chasing those swells with those types of boards. And so I do think that at 51, and he has spent time off tour due to injury in the last decade. And I think that's the real, that's a real threat. It's like, dude, I can't get injured at this point because it risks me doing what I do best.
He did say that he hadn't been surfing big waves recently, right? In that interview, and all that kind of stuff. But I still think Kelly's being the best, being narcissistic Kelly Slater, wanted his name there that day. Like, and so the only thing that kept it out, it's the most prestigious event in surfing, right? A, Kelly wants to be there. It's the day of days. Kelly wants to be on the day of days. Kelly would have very much wanted to win, I think, the Eddie. Like, it would have not, imagine last year at this time, or roughly this time, he won Pipeline. 1 year later, he wins the Eddie. He would love to see, that would be splashed across headlines everywhere. 51-year-old surf great wins most prestigious contest in the world, right? I mean, he wanted it all. He thought he was going to die. He honestly thought he was going
to die. You're 100% right. He does have narcissism. He does want all of those things. And this is an indicator that the narcissism was actually overrun by his practicality. His prudence actually reigned supreme on that day in that moment.
I don't think it can. I do not think it can. I think that, and watching him twitch and itch and fight and, like, self-loathe in that one moment, and then try to brush it over with doing a good thing, which, again, I'm not saying anything about. It was a wonderful thing that he did, right? I mean, without any shade, I'm not throwing shade at all. But Kelly, as a competitor and as highly competitive and as ridiculously so competitive that his whole life has revolved around this thing in a way that nobody else out there, his life has revolved around surfing in the way Kelly Slater says, right? That's all he's got. That's all he is. To back away from the day of days with the storyline of storylines on down the line, death. Death loomed. Death was nibbling at his ears.
Another storyline coming out of this day that nobody's talked about. Zeke Lau got the wave of the day.
Put on a show.
Yeah. So
Lau was a YMA surfer.
I was surprised to see his name on that invite list. Again, that's one where Albie Layer could argue, like, hey, Zeke's a great surfer, but...
But Zeke put on a show. Zeke wasn't just on there as a name, right? Like, Zeke clearly is surfing YMA when nobody's looking.
And he got a 30-point ride, which is the perfect score for a single wave. So just to kind of let people know the way the scoring works, I would presume there's three judges. I don't know for sure, but it seems to me that there's three judges scoring on a 10-point scale. And then those scores just get added rather than averaged like they do on the CT. But either way, no matter how many judges there are, how they do it, 30 points is a perfect ride. You surf two heats and your top three waves from those two heats goes into your final score. So at the end, you could have as good as a 90-point score for the day. Well, Zeke got a perfect ride. He got a 30. John also got a 30. Mark Healy got a 30. One, Luke Shepherdson got two 30s and a 29.1. So if a perfect score is 90 at the end of the day, Luke Shepherdson got 89.1, near perfect.
0.9 away from perfection, and deserved it too. Ooh, let's talk about the scoring. I mean, unless you have a lot more to say about Zeke Lau.
No.
Let's go on to the scoring. So this Eddie, instead of broadcasting the scores in real time, held till the very end and then delivered the scores, right? And I think it was Kaipo and Rocky kept talking about how they wanted to keep the suspense and whatnot of the end. And I think that was clearly not why they were doing it. They just had no real way of, they didn't have the technology to put the scores up, it seemed, right? And so they weren't going to bother
with it.
They had no way to get the judges' scores onto the screen or to the announcers in real time. And so, but that wouldn't work at like a pipeline or whatever. But I really like the whole thing. And I've been advocating for this for a while of hold the scores of a heat until the end of the heat, right? For this event, you could hold it till the end of the day. And it totally worked. Did knowing the scores or not knowing the scores change in any material way the viewing or your viewing experience?
Yeah, see, I think that it works better for a CT event, especially when it's man on man, to not know the scores and to in fact, and I would argue even the judges don't need to judge in real time. Wait until you have the 30 minutes complete, then you can decide how those waves stack up against one another and who wins. But out here in this environment, I think it's less competitive, strangely. It's not really this person versus this person, it's these people versus the ocean. And it's more of a camaraderie, like they're all trying to get the best wave from the ocean, not the best wave over one another. And in fact, they're riding a lot of the waves together. So I think that understanding the scoring throughout the day is totally fine. And it would add to the day. It doesn't take away from the day in this scenario.
Really? I would argue that you're watching in real time these epic rides and sort of tabulating in your head. Like I had Luke's ride as the best of the day, right? Like I had Luke not as the winner per se, but had him way up top. Like I didn't know who was going to win, but I think it made my experience as a viewer more interesting because I got to think of who I thought was best. And then at the end, okay. Like, and I don't think there was any disagreement, right? At the end of, I mean, maybe I can't remember who won eighth place.
No.
Like nobody cares, but at the top, Luke first, John second. I think Zeke was third, right?
Mark Healy was third. Zeke's not even in the top 10.
Oh, Zeke wasn't?
No, it goes Luke Shepherdson, John, Mark Healy, Billy Kemper. Kai Lenny. And then you're right, Zeke is number six. I'm sorry.
Yeah. So in any case, though, I don't know. If I was the World Surf League, who has yet to mention the contest in any way, shape, or form, if I was them, though, I would really been taking notes about we don't have to, like, judging in real time is silly, and chances are you're going to get the wrong surfer through, or chances are a lot greater that the wrong surfer is going to get pushed through unless you hold the scoring till the end.
So I'm thinking about it more as you're talking, and I think the reason why I wanted to see that leaderboard scoring on the screen for Waimea was because I'm so used to seeing it. But if I just remove myself from that, I think you're right.
Because they could have scored, like they could have pushed the ceiling way too high, way too early,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
They could have had, because the waves really did like seem to get bigger and meaner as the day went on, right? There's no, sure the forecast was suggesting that might happen, but there's no telling it will, right? And so it kept the ceiling not from getting blown out and early. And I'm sure since they weren't published, they could go back and compare rides to each other through the day. Does this, because I feel again, and I wasn't watching as keenly as to know if, Kai Lenny beat Zeke Lau, but I would imagine that every surfer was exactly where they were supposed to be, which that's what you get when you hold scoring until the end.
You're totally right. I think the only reason that they ever implemented real-time scoring was for it's like to engage the audience,
sure,
to give but when the waves are big and that's engaging enough, like again, the central tenet is surfers against the ocean. That's engaging enough. The secondary or tertiary thing should be the scoring. Like that's really not the most important thing. And it's also a futile effort to try to get it right without knowing what's coming later in the heat or later in the day. So you're right. You can perfect the scoring by just holding it off.
You're waiting. You could score heat by heat, right? Every heat is its own segment. So you're not going to score one heat against another. You're going to score that heat. But in order to get that heat correct, you've got to wait till the end of the heat to know what happened.
Yeah. And then you can review it real quick, 5 minutes of downtime. Here's the highlights package, boom. And yeah, this wave's better than that wave. Yeah.
They would like the scoring arguments and rage and all that, that I think maybe the WSL's feeling that enragement is engagement. And so they like people arguing score. But to me, it only ever takes away from the product, and they get it wrong way more often than they should. And it's not the judge's fault. It's an impossible task. How do you know what's coming next?
Totally. Yeah, but that's so much of the WSL. Like us even fighting these little tedious battles throughout every event at the WSL is all just a reflection of them having the cart before the horse in 8 out of 10 ways. Like starting with running in beach breaks or running in wave pools, like not running in good surf, you know?
Why in the world, and I hate to do this to you, I got a 15-minute hard out. I got to take.
Okay.
But why in the world did not the World Surf League or any of the like number one, I guess I didn't look at Dave Prodan's personal socials, but like crickets, absolute crickets. How, of course it's not your event. Of course it doesn't matter. It's not a competing property. It's like rising tide floats all boats, right? If the more people get excited about the Eddie, the more people will watch the upcoming pipeline, right? How are you not out there thinking, you know, all kudos in the world to them for putting on an amazing, I don't like, it seems ridiculous and to me laid bare any kind of, I don't know, respectability that the WSL has. That seemed egregious to me.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, ultimately, if you're a surf fan, how do you not fawn over what just happened on Sunday? And it's them self-identifying as non-surf fans. I mean, self-identifying as a business person.
I mean, I don't know how Jesse Miley, like ELO is whatever, but how does Jesse Miley Dyer, she had, what was her Instagram? She had something up of like her standing with the pro juniors at Sinking Seaside or something. And Eric Logan had like a congratulations to himself for being interviewed on a tennis show, which was apt.
Oh yeah. My gosh.
Yeah.
I don't even know what to say.
Yeah. I mean, it's ridiculous.
Congratulations to himself.
Yeah, it was like, oh, I was so honored to be part of the, you know, box to box, whatever, who does make or breaks, new tennis series. And it was whatever. Like, but are you kidding me? Are you stinking kidding me? That how in the world were you not? I felt even the most passive of surf fan was maybe not watching bell to bell, but was really engaged for moments they were watching.
And if not, you know, on the day of, they've been engaged ever since, you know, tracking and celebrating and sending Luke money or whatever, yeah. which let's talk about prize money. So because you got to go in 15 minutes, I want to try to prioritize the most important topics of the day. Luke Shepherdson, winner of the Eddy on Sunday, won $10,000 in prize money, as well as 350,000 Hawaiian airline miles. John Florence, the winner of the event in 2016 and Sunday's runner-up, won 75K in 2016. So the prize money dropped $65,000 since it last ran, which is, of course, related to Quicksilver's not being involved in the event anymore. But what are your thoughts on this?
I mean, I don't care, to be honest. Like, to me, to win the Eddie is the reward in and of itself. I'm sure... Who am I to tell Luke Shepherdson he shouldn't want $65,000 more? And it does seem like a bummer. It seems like, but it's, you know, it's reflective of the surf industry. Like there's no brand that I can think of. I mean, Yeti might be able to, and I'm sure after this one, somebody will take a hard look at sponsoring it again. But, you know, I don't know. As a fan, the lack of surf, the lack of money, I hope that Luke gets paid somehow for this. He deserves it. But if he doesn't, I mean, that's the thing. It's, you know, and again, who am I to say? But it's people who win the lottery and then commit suicide. Like money ain't always the answer. Maybe Luke was living an idyllic life, and you can ask him as a lifeguard with a family, you know, on the North Shore.
So it seems like a total injustice when you look at the numbers. But honestly, if I think about it, I'd rather nobody won any money at all. Like this event is core, it's pure, and adding any amount of sponsor logos, any amount of money starts to, I don't know what, change it. You know, it changes the purity of it. And I would argue that all of those surfers, even the $1 million athletes who surfed in this event, would do it with zero money attached to it. Like, this is a prestigious event. They all want to be there just for the sake of being there and being able to surf Waimea with just a few other people in the lineup. So Luke would have surfed it. John would have surfed it. Kai, all those guys would have surfed it just because it's prestigious. And so I don't think that there even needs to be money involved. I would be okay with completely eradicating the money and just doing a super core event and you get your name on the trophy.
For, and again, you know, easy for us to say, we're not out there competing, but the cornice of it. It was a beautiful event to watch. I really, truly loved the lack of like any kind of or overt corporate stuff that makes the WSL broadcast painful. But also kudos to Surfline. Surfline did a phenomenal job of broadcasting the show. Like, I felt, of course, there's a couple of times you wanted this angle or that angle or whatever, but overall, which makes me think, man, if Surfline could start an invitational tour, or not even a tour, sorry, just do like 4 invitationals a year, a Pipeline Invitational, a Cloudbreak Invitational, and just do it. They have the ability to broadcast. They did a phenomenal job.
So I talked about this last week and maybe the week before when the Eddie didn't run, you know, on that January 11th swell or whatever, but Surfline streamed it live. And I talked about that exact thing. I'm like, these guys, this is the new way forward. And I'm sure that they've plotted for it, but they're realizing now how great of an idea it is and how simple it will be to implement, because it doesn't even need to be a contest. I think a contest might emerge out of the concept, but if they just document they know exactly where the swells are, when and where they're happening. They also know that Kai Lenny is headed there, that Kelly Slater's headed there, that Mark Healy and Nathan Florence are headed there, because those people are on a direct line with Surfline asking for advice. So if they know that Nathan Florence is headed that direction, they go, hey, let's just set up the camera crews. Maybe they have people in each location around the planet that they can activate, or maybe they send a crew. But whatever the case is, they can implement. That's the easy part to implement. The part that the WSL has a hard time solving for is moving hordes of people around the globe and having permits at the right time and all that. All that hard cost is the challenging part for the WSL. Surfline doesn't have any of that. They're not even trying to fly the people there. The people are already flying there on their own. Surfline just has to turn the cameras on and stream. Well,
and I suppose you solve all problems by not making it a contest, because then you have, you know, all the World Surf League surfers, of course, have signed contracts where they can't, you know, and there's sanction event, the Eddie-ish sanction. There's a few more sanction events they're allowed to surf in, but they're not allowed to surf in other contests typically, right? If it's not a contest, if you're just turning the camera on, then for the best place, you know, best days at best places, everybody's going to be there already. Who cares? Like, let the viewer at home decide who won the day, right?
That could be the contest. We don't need professional judges. I mean, part of the fun of watching the Eddie was the streaming commentary on the side from users. And so if you could just implement a little scoring system from the users themselves, you know, and there doesn't have to be prize money attached to it or anything like that. It could just be
who won the day, who won the best day.
And of course the viewers are going to start trolling and trying to like screw up the system. But if there's no money attached to it, then it really doesn't matter anyways. You know, we can review the end of the day and see who got the best waves. And if the users votes reflect that, great. If not, that's also no big deal. I think it's a huge opportunity for Surfline. They're sitting on a gold mine. I was watching every time I turned on the streaming, there was 75 to 90,000 concurrent viewers at any given time.
Which the WSL hasn't even, I mean, I know they're having, you could only watch the Eddie through the YouTube player, as far as I was aware.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes.
The World Surf League has it on their side. Then they have a YouTube and then they have a Facebook and stuff. So I don't know what they pretend to argue, but if you look at the concurrent for any, the most I've ever seen on like a Facebook is 13,000 or something, right?
Yeah.
The most I've ever seen on a YouTube is maybe 20. Like add it up, you know, whatever. I don't know how they get their funny math, but I've never seen close to 90,000 on any of the YouTube or on any WSL contest ever.
Never. Me neither. And you're right. It is always funny math, and it's sheltered from what we can actually confirm. Whereas the Surfline stream was through YouTube. So it's YouTube that's providing that number. It's not Surfline providing the number and saying, this is how many people are watching, which in theory they would be able to manipulate. It's YouTube's own counter, you know? Well, so
Surfline doesn't care because Surfline wasn't selling, as far as I could see, sponsorship dollars against it.
No.
Or the broadcast font. So it didn't matter if 4 people watched it or 90,000 or 90 million people watched it, right? It was, the more people watch it, it's good for Surfline because they're watching through Surfline typically, you know, so it's all good for them, but they don't need to, there was no need for them to lie about numbers in order to sell sponsorship, which is what the World Surf League is.
Totally. Two quick things before you go. You got 6 minutes left.
Yes.
We'll do it. Did you see who's the most recent user and promoter of athleticgreens.com/surf?
Who is it?
It's a professional top 5 CT male surfer.
Philippe Toledo.
Jack Robinson.
Oh, perfect. Good. Jack Robinson, I can get behind.
I know. Fortitude. He posted an Instagram yesterday or maybe the day before, like announcing his partnership with athleticgreens.com. And for us, it's /surf. I don't think his is /surf. I don't even know if he has a URL to go through. But I was like, man, that's a feather in our cap. We've been on this program for 2 years. And so to see him come around to it. And I remember in Make or Break, the TV show, season 1, Kanoa had it on his countertop in his kitchen as well. You could just see it in the background. So to see Jack Robinson get on board, I really felt validated.
I do too. And for the listener at home and or in the car and or at work, join Jack, athleticgreens.com/surf, health, vitality, make you a better surfer. Guaranteed. I guarantee you'll be a better surfer if you consume athleticgreens.com/surf.
Welcome aboard, Jack Robinson. And if he does win a world title this year, I am totally pointing to athleticgreens.com/surf as the reason.
100%. Should we, you and I, do a welcome to the team Instagram for Jack Robinson?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I always like the welcome to the teams.
Me too. And since we're essentially team managers at this point, yes, yeah, we should do that.
Yes.
I'm just going to give you one important barrel or nah, also related to the Eddie. Quote, big wave stud Pete Mel cements legacy, a style icon, sports pair of Webbs surf paddling gloves at the Eddie. Webbed gloves for surfing, barrel or not?
Unfortunately, as a style move, complete barrel. So as I was researching this story, apparently there is a pair that only, I remember very clearly Apes and Webbs. I could not find reference to either. I found one reference to Webbs, historical reference, found zero printed Apes stories. Did find pictures of Richie Collins with Ape, you know, clearly written on his glove, but I don't know how in the surf archives it got fully Stalin-esque scrub that era. But all to say, as a style move, yes, it's research though. Apparently, paddling gloves not only do not help you catch waves, they injure you.
How do they not help you catch waves?
I think the force of your paddle isn't much greater with the web, but the pressure on your muscles or joints or ligaments or something is greater. And so you're just blowing out your arms.
Fascinating.
Yeah, there you go.
Because I was thinking the argument would be that the force of your paddling is just negligibly, like you're barely going any faster. But Pete Mel will say, I need as every little bit that I can get, so I'm going to use them. But if there is actually a consequence, then you got to.
I mean, I guess I suppose that is the research that I did find, though. Pete Mel using them, I'll trust Pete's experience more than a scientist's research.
I mean, honestly, how do they study this? It's in a laboratory, in a little pool with.
Sure.
It's not the same.
Ain't a wise man. No, if it's good enough, I mean, it's words I live by usually anyway. If it's good enough for Pete Mel, it's good enough for me.
Agreed. Now, here's the thing. Is it only cool if you're surfing 50-foot Waimea?
I mean, I do believe it's probably a Kukulcan where if you see somebody wearing paddling gloves, they either fully suck or they're ripping.
You nailed it. That is the ultimate kook or curran. There is no in between.
Nope. I've never seen an average surfer in paddling gloves.
And I am an average surfer, but if I paddled out at Huntington Beach tomorrow wearing webbed gloves, you can almost guarantee I'm gonna get downgraded real quickly. I'm gonna fall trying to stand up.
You might though, like blast the tail out, do a monster carb just like Richie Collins. You don't know.
Skeletor. That's a monster floater, I think.
Skeletor,
wasn't that his nickname?
Yeah, it sure was.
I wonder why. He kind of looks like Skeletor. He's got like the big jawline, the pronounced jawline, and
that was a good blast from the past right there.
So I was thinking as you were talking about, gosh, when you were saying, how is there no reference to apes anywhere? Here's what needs to happen. I think Matt Warshaw stated it. We've stated it. I have all these surf mags in my garage. Get one of those scanners. They're cheap now. Scan all of that stuff into digital format and run some sort of, I know there's algorithm software that you could just purchase that databases all the words in the entire magazine and the imagery and all that sort of stuff. So we create a searchable database of all of the surf mags that have ever existed. Because there's so many things I remember, like a particular image of a wave or a particular story that was written, like Shane Dorian telling a story about being held up at gunpoint in Brazil and his two surfboards being stolen. I'm like, what was the date on that? Or did he actually say that? Or am I confusing it with something else? And I want to just be able to look it up. And I know it exists. You know, I need the proof.
You know who has all the magazines is the museum, Surfing Museum, or the Surf Culture Check.
I know.
Heritage and Culture Center.
And that's probably on their list of things to do, but they have a giant list of things to do and they're underfunded and understaffed. You know, it's just
people send money to Shaq today.
Send money to Shaq or Matt Warshaw because he's got his own list of things to do and that are equally important. But that's one that I would love to have.
I agree.
Hey, man, sorry that you have to go.
Me too, man. This is a good day of talking. Got our
airport. Well, we've got much more next week because the pipe event is scheduled to start in 3 days. Are you playing Survival League?
Yes, I need to sign up still. I'm signing up today. For those who haven't, I meant to talk about this too. For those who have not signed up to Survival League, it is by far the funnest thing to do. It beats any fantasy over the head. Sign up. Survival League? Survival League.
It's survival-league.com. But just Google Survival League, Survival League. And
I've been really
trying to
find it. My surfer is.
What?
I've been really struggling with who I'm going to go for.
I know. Well, we can't discuss because we're out of time, but you need to get your pick in before the pipe event starts. That's the thing. It's a $20 buy-in for the entire season, but you have to sign up before the season starts. And it's a $5,000 grand prize at the end of the year for the winner, plus three Panda surfboards. And here's the deal. It's like a survival league in any other sport. If you lose once, you're out for the rest of the season. So the whole point is to make it through past the round of 32 in each event. You can only pick one surfer. That surfer has to make it past the round of 32 for the event, and then you're into the next event. But you can only pick a given surfer once a season. So you can't just pick Gabriel and ride him through the rest of the season. Once you pick Gabe, if you pick him for pipe, can't pick him for the rest of the year. So you have to be picky.
You think it's easy, 32, round of 32. You think, oh, I got this. It is difficult and stressful.
Well, it is. And once you're out, you have to wait till next season to play again. And that's what sucks about it. So anyways, Survival League, go join, get your $20 in and before the pipe event starts, which is in 3 days, potentially.
Do it.
All right. And then we'll discuss the CT season on our next show next week.
Great.
All right, Chaz, be well. And yeah, until next week.
Bon voyage.
When you're hiring for a small business, you want to find quality professionals that are right for the role, and there's no faster or effective way than through LinkedIn Jobs. Your time and capital are precious, and there is a powerful resource that can help you focus on what you're good at and integrate people into your team seamlessly to help grow your business. LinkedIn Jobs has created the tools to find the right professionals for your team efficiently and for free. LinkedIn isn't just another job board. Everyone is already on LinkedIn with their resumes and references, and now LinkedIn has designed a hiring platform to connect you with candidates specifically qualified for the job that you post about. More than 1 billion professionals meticulously organized to connect people by skill set to help us all advance our position. 2.5 million businesses already use LinkedIn for hiring, and 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. It's that fast, easy to use, and effective. LinkedIn Jobs can help you write job descriptions, filter the right person to you, and give you the tools to help you interview them like a pro. LinkedInJobs.com/surf is where you go to post your job for free. Yes, totally free. That's linkedinjobs.com/surf to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply.